Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
All righty. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dealmakers Show. So today we have a really amazing founder. You know, we're going to be talking about all the good stuff that we like to hear, the building, the scaling, the financing, also exiting too. And again, you know, I find that quite inspiring, the conversation where we're going to be touching, you know, on, for example, the early days of building a business, on how to go about dealing with tough moments, perhaps say rounds of financings, like in their case, their Series A, how they did it in 10 days, which is kind of crazy. Also, their Series B, how that came together. But again, a lot of good stuff that I think that you're all going to enjoy very much. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Yusef West. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Alejandro. It's great to be here.
So let's do a little of a walk through memory lane here, Yusef, because you were born in London, in the UK, but eventually you ended up growing up in Canada. So walk us through, how was life growing up for you?
I guess growing up in Canada, I was in like a small town outside of Toronto, in a lot of ways, like very idyllic, like kind of beautiful place to be. But, you know, I grew up with English and Persian parents. And, you know, in that context, we're in a smaller town in Canada, you know, 20 plus years ago now, which kind of dates me a little bit. And so, you know, we were one of a few, I would say, or a smaller portion of like kind of immigrant families. And so growing up in that environment, it was a lot of learning and kind of like not quite fitting in, like sort of fitting in. And, you know, Canada was going through a lot of change at the time, you know, as it's continued to do over the last 20 years. But I mean, what a time to be in Canada. I think, you know, this as a place to grow up, it's the ideals, the values, the kind of melting pot that it is. I think it gives you a unique lens on society and how to build a life.
That's incredible. I mean, obviously, being there with immigrant parents too, you know, I'm sure that also influenced a lot who you are today.
Yeah, like 100%. I think, you know, I kind of joke with family and friends that I was raised with perhaps a little bit of a problem with authority or, you know, wanting to question things. I was definitely the kid in school who would, and perhaps annoyingly, correct the teacher. And I just didn't care, which I'm sure was very annoying for the teachers. But I think that as like a foundation and, you know, my parents kind of encouraging me to kind of question the world around you, right? Like we all know that this world was built by people just like us. I know there's that wonderful like Steve Jobs quote. I think that is extremely true. And I think when you recognize that power and, you know, what's possible, if you were just to kind of direct your energy towards something and maybe question the status quo and go and build something different, I think it unlocks a lot.
That's amazing. So then in your case, you know, too, one thing that was quite interesting is the fact that you got bored with high school. You know, I mean, you get bored with stuff very quickly. You know, that's something, that's a pattern, you know, that I've identified, especially when it comes to education. I mean, whether it was high school or law school, no? So what's going on there with getting bored with education so quickly?
I don't know what it was. I would get bored in school. I didn't find it as challenging or engaging as I would have liked it to be. And so I ended up trying to figure out a way to complete high school in 3 years. And then I was raised with English and Persian parents. So I was, you know, what was shared with me about my career options were like, you get to be a doctor or a lawyer, as I'm sure, you know, many immigrant families, kind of doctor, lawyer, engineer. Engineer wasn't kind of presented to me as an option. And so I was trying to figure out how to become a lawyer as quickly as possible, because the thought of doing, you know, your traditional 4-year undergrad and then 3 years of law school just sounded entirely mind numbing. And so, yeah, I figured out how to kind of get through high school as quickly as possible, and then realized that in the UK, you can kind of get an LLB in 3 years. And so I went across the pond and went out and did that and kind of got that degree at the age of 20, basically.
So then getting the law degree, I mean, I'm sure that gave you a lot of perspective and understanding too. I mean, even though you got bored and you didn't want to really practice much, you know, the legal side of things, I'm sure that gave you quite the foundation for being able to tackle the business side of things.
Yeah, like effectively, you know, I talked to a lot of other people in business who have, you know, similar backgrounds. And for those of us that didn't go into practice, I think what it teaches you fundamentally is how to take, you know, a set of information and build an argument, right? And build a perspective on something and have conviction around it. Because that's effectively all you're doing in law school every day. You're reading a bunch of materials, cases, perspectives, and then pulling that together to form your perspective on a subject. And when you think about what it takes to kind of go and build something from nothing, there's just a lot of ambiguity, a lot of uncertainty, and you have to put the pieces together and help them make sense in a way that is compelling and convincing to not only the market, to a team, to investors. So 100% that it's been very helpful.
That's amazing. So then in your case, you know, like once you got your law degree, how did you go about, you know, essentially getting into the business world, you know, getting together with a group of friends and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so I kind of came out of law school and I wasn't too excited, as you kind of alluded to actually go out and practice. Like I'd you know, done some summer jobs, you know, in law firms, and I wasn't excited about the work in that context. And so I was trying to figure out how to start something. Effectively, my family, half of them are lawyers and half are like entrepreneurs. And so I was kind of getting together with friends, trying to figure out like any idea, like, could we, you know, offer travel experiences? Could we make like a virtual greeting card company? It didn't matter. I was trying to find something and ended up, we landed on kind of like a stock research platform that was free, you know, with ads, like a bad business model. But, you know, it was three of us, we were early 20s, and we just, you know, made it up on volume, just worked really hard, even though we might not have known exactly what we were doing. I raised a little bit of money, like 25 grand Canadian, and we're lucky enough to kind of land the plane and be acquired by a company called Wave here in Toronto, which was a financial services company, or, you know, a full service financial services app for micro SMBs.
What is that process of being acquihired? Because I know that, you know, most people that are listening, you know, they're really familiar with the acquisition, you know, and that stuff that they read on the TechCrunch of the world. But what is it like really an acquihire? And how is the process of going through an acquihire?
Yeah, so I think all kind of acquisitions happen, or at least in the experiences that I've had, have been a result of like longer term relationships. So when we were building that first company, I saw some parallels between what we were doing, which was like a free kind of financial app with ads, to Wave, which at the time was a free financial app with ads. And they'd been able to raise, candidly, a lot more capital than we had and felt much further along. So I'd reached out to the founders basically saying like, hey, we're kind of doing what you're doing, but for stocks. And I'd love to kind of learn from you. And they spent time with us. And I remember one of the founders said to me, you know, maybe one day we'll buy you. And I was like, okay, kind of locking that away for later. And then we were going through what was to be like our pre-seed round now, fundraise. And we weren't too excited about the partners around the table at the time. And we kind of felt like, is this really how we want to spend our time? You know, basically went back to the founders of Wave and said, hey, I know you kind of joked about this, but would you be interested in doing something? Here's where we are. You know, here's what our last valuation was. Can we figure out like how to make this work? And they grilled us. They basically interviewed us pretty aggressively and, you know, made sure we were high quality people. And there was definitely an assessment of a character, I would say, in a lot of regards, especially as you're like going through a deal, like how do you comport yourself? How do you treat people who aren't in the room as well, and making sure you're taking care of everyone? So we managed to kind of get ourselves to a place where, you know, I was 23 when it closed, or just 24, a little bit of cash. Like it wasn't, you know, very exciting, but it was good. I learned a ton. I got a great set of experience, and I probably wouldn't be in this position without that deal having gone through.
So then let's talk about, you know, what happened next, because, you know, you go from, you know, ultimately, you know, going through an acquisition, now having like the full visibility into what the cycle of a startup is. And then what happened next to you?
Yeah. So, I mean, going from, you know, it was basically like two of us at this startup to, you know, a 90-person, 100-person company. It was a little bit of culture shock, I would say. And, you know, trying to figure out like, how do you deliver value in that context and still feel the same energy and ownership when it's not yours. And so we spent like a year approximately, basically got to, you know, certain milestones from an equity perspective. And, you know, we learned a ton. That business was my first exposure to small business and how critical kind of back office technology really is to, you know, small business owners. We were, when we joined, it was, I think we joined in like September 20. They were working on this huge re-platform of the product so they could go, instead of just being an accounting solution, they could go multi-product. And this was back before it was best practice necessarily to do like feature flags and allow people to switch back and forth. And so we shipped this new beautiful platform. I think it was on like December 1st or something like that. And Alejandro, it was not a good experience for these customers. Like, absolutely, like they were so angry at us. And it was, you know, it was kind of terrible in this way that like, hey, we shipped this thing. It delivered, it was antithetical to our core goal, which is help these small business owners, making their lives worse at the end of the year where they're starting to think about like taxes and like wrapping stuff up. And so they were so angry at us that even when we went to our holiday party, we weren't allowed to tweet on like, or post on social or anything, because there's a level of anger. And, you know, in any storm, there's always kind of like a moment of light, I think, or at least you can find it. You can find that silver lining. And it was this great learning moment where I got to see what it actually looks like where you have something that customers really care about. The fact that people were so mad, obviously you never want to like deliver that type of experience, but it was really enlightening about like how critical back office solutions can be to business owners. And that was like kind of my light bulb moment and probably inspired my career up until this point.
So for example, with Hubdoc, you know, the early days were not easy. You know, we're a little bit slower than what would have hoped. I guess, what were some, I mean, Hubdoc ended up being acquired by Xero, so it ended up having a nice outcome. But the early days, I think that this is kind of like a, you know, some good insights for also for the people that are listening that, hey, there's not going to be an overnight success. It's going to take time to really figure things out.
Yeah. So I, for context, I joined them when they had just done a pivot from kind of like B2C to B2B. So they were kind of a, you know, file store, digital file storage system for consumers. It didn't quite work. And they realized that they had a valuable solution for small business owners. And so they were trying to figure out this pivot. So I joined them right as they had made that changeover. You know, a lot of our positioning of who we thought we could sell to, we thought we could sell to accountants and bookkeepers, and they would refer us to their small business clients, which ended up being true. But in the early days, especially when a lot of these folks were still on desktop-based accounting software, it was really challenging because they hadn't fully adopted the new platforms, which we needed them to adopt for our solution to be valuable. And so I'd be getting on calls with customers, like faking, you know, integrations that existed on like different tabs to just see the response, to see what might work. What is the right kind of structure for this product that could be really successful, and testing some of the hypotheses that we had as a team. And yeah, it took us, you know, I think those first 9 months, you know, you get 20% in monthly growth and you're like, oh, it was like $200, right? And you're like going crying into your pillow at night. But the feedback that we heard from people was that like, as long as there's consistency in the growth, over time, it just compounds and you just have to keep going. And what we saw at the same time, so, you know, it was 9 months to $7,000 a month in revenue, but we also had partners which were like, you know, Intuit and Xero in the North American market who were pushing cloud accounting really aggressively. And suddenly we saw the market starting to shift. And suddenly from us pushing and me like being desperate, like we're driving to wherever, whoever would actually like speak to us about this product, to market now pulling us and seeing a lot more word of mouth. And suddenly the business really started to crank. And that's what enabled us to scale from, you know, zero to, you know, what I left, it was 25,000 paying small businesses. And then my team took it because it was a marketing led motion. And kind of that was my function. The team took it to 50,000, I think, by the time of the acquisition, kind of four or 5 months later, which was really crazy.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So as they say, once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur. So really, at what point does really the idea, you know, really kick in and you're like, my God, I gotta take this one on?
Yeah. So, you know, I really believe in the idea that careers are kind of these squiggly lines. Like it's not all up and to the right. When I was at HubDoc, I was there kind of 4 years and change. Every time an idea, a problem, no matter how big, small, maybe dumb it might seem, I wrote it down in like an Evernote notebook. And I know that slightly dates me because no one uses Evernote anymore. But one of the challenges we had as a team was like our business banking and our stack. There was, you know, experiences we had where one of the founders would have to take out consumer Amazon Prime credit cards to be able to get corporate cards for the leadership team. And then we're like, finally, like we have something that works. And then 2 weeks later, you know, all those cards are canceled. And all the banks would not give you a credit card unless it was fully secured against cash, which in that case, like, what's the point? And so that was like one of the ideas that I kind of like squirreled away. And after I left HubDoc, I was kind of half-time consulting, trying to figure out what was next. I was really wanting to like go and take another run at it. And my co-founder, Paul, and I, so Paul runs our kind of delivery side of the house. As we were kind of working through ideas, it just became really obvious to us that, you know, the last, you know, at the time, this is so like late 2018, early 2018, the last 10 years were focused on A, like unbundling the bank account. So like taking everything out of the bank. So like Bill.com is a perfect example of this, where they took online bill pay and turned it into a $20 billion plus company. And, you know, everyone was trying to solve everything around the bank account. But the problem was that most small business owners live inside their bank account. We see this today with our own customers, where 40% of customers with revenue and payroll connected, they log into Relay every day, right? For like a business product, that's like, that is insane in terms of stickiness, because that's how they live their life. We kind of joke internally that small business owners wake up in the morning and they check two things. They check Instagram and their bank account. Like that's it. And in a traditional context, the bank balance is not a helpful piece of information, right? I have $100,000. That's great. But you know, you've got payroll due next week. You have bills due this month. You know, maybe you have money coming in. And so our vision is, what if we actually create kind of a smart bank account that's like deeply interconnected into the small business back office? Could we, you know, increase financial visibility, help small business owners make better decisions, and ultimately enable anyone to build a profitable business? You know, banking can deliver cash flow confidence, and that's our goal here.
So what ended up being the business model of Relay? How do you guys make money?
So it's a combination of, you know, traditional financial services. So we make money off float revenue, which is like interest income, interchange off debit and credit kind of spend on cards, and then transaction fees and subscription.
And also for getting a, you know, solid understanding too on the capital side of things, how much capital have you guys raised to date?
I think it's just shy of $53 million.
And what has been the experience too of going through the motions and through the different life cycles? Because I know that the Series A was pretty amazing, you know, like in no time. And then you had the Series B. So how has it been that journey too of raising the money?
You know, I think we had different experiences kind of along the way. We're pretty grateful to have like very supportive investors just generally, even from our earliest days. I would say that the inflection point on our fundraising kind of journey was when we raised our seed round. And we went from, you know, we raised our pre-seed and we raised it predominantly from Canadian investors, like really high quality folks that, you know, we still have great relationships with today. And our seed was led by Better Tomorrow Ventures based out of San Francisco. And, you know, the folks involved there, one person is Jake Gibson, who is one of the co-founders of NerdWallet, and then Sheil Monat. And both of them are like, number one, amazing human beings, two, pretty savvy investors. And when we started doing kind of references as we were kind of evaluating their term sheet, it became really clear to us that by working with them, we would be able to lower our long-term cost of capital. Because the feedback that we heard about them as investors is they are quote unquote great pickers. And so we went from kind of the seed round that was, you know, don't tell them, but like, you know, struggling to come together to this like hot deal, oversubscribed. Suddenly, you know, Bain, who would later lead our Series A and Series B, you know, put a, you know, option check or, you know, a lead gen check as it's called into our round. And, you know, it changed the dynamics. And I think the trajectory of our fundraising journey, but I would say that was like a critical moment. The backstory on the Series A and kind of like, you know, I mentioned the seed, we had Bain put a little bit of capital in, and the person involved there is a person named Carrie Goman, who previously ran Capital One Small Business Bank. And she was actually the sponsor for the HubDoc acquisition by Xero. So long-standing relationship, long-term kind of understanding of our space. And she had seen kind of all the SMB neobank deals. And she's like, this is the one that is building what should actually exist, which is, you know, an SMB neobank designed for businesses, heart of America small businesses with employees. And so, you know, when they wrote that lead gen check, we kind of invited her in as though she had written a much bigger check. And invited her to our board meetings. And, you know, as we were kind of going through that process, because we raised the seed round in October 2020, we closed our Series A in April 2021. And, you know, it was kind of a heady time, but that's when it happened. Another investor had come out of the woodwork and wanted to preempt kind of Relay. And we were working our way up to figure out like kind of better terms that we were more excited about, and got them to a place where like, okay, this kind of felt okay in a, you know, fair set of terms based on where we are. And then once I had that, I then went and called Carrie and said, hey, you know, you kind of joked about Bain doing our Series A, like, do you want to do that? And so effectively inside of 10 days, it was Monday to Monday, because I called her on a Monday evening. And then we pitched the partnership on the following Monday and had the term sheet in hand that evening. And the terms are really compelling. Obviously, Carrie's like a powerhouse in terms of what she's done. And so it just felt like a good place to start.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I guess when it comes to fundraising too, what would you say has been your biggest lesson?
I think each round comes with its own set of challenges. I would say that the thing that I think is true is the investor has to believe two things. They have to believe A, in your vision of the world and what the future will look like, and two, have to see a bit of themselves in you. I think they have to really believe in you as a human and feel connected. And I think when those two things come together, you can get a deal done. And so, you know, for us, we're in it for the long haul and really want to bring on investors that match us culturally. And like from a values perspective, that's really important. And so when I get on fundraising calls, I kind of like, I amp up some of my own idiosyncrasies and quirks just to see how people respond and engage. And, you know, generally it's pretty received well, but sometimes, you know, it's less good. But I think that's actually pretty informative, candidly. That might not be a great relationship, because when someone's on your cap table, it's, you know, as we all know, like it's a marriage. And we're really wanting to build something long term.
So talking about long term, now let's talk about the vision, because that's where the investors are banking, you know, onto. If you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world where the vision of Relay is fully realized, what does that world look like?
So how many years am I out for, Alejandro? Am I 1 year, 10 years?
It's quite the snooze. It's quite the snooze.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk 5 years out. So I think fundamentally what we're building is effectively this, like, we call it the financial command center for, you know, employee businesses. And we think about the future of business banking as being built in three phases. So phase one is like natively collaborative banking. So, you know, checking, savings, debit, credit, payments with like a user permission layer on top. So Alejandro, if you had a Relay account, you could invite me in and do everything from saying, hey, I want to give you full access with like audit trails attached, all the way down to saying, hey, I'm going to set up a separate checking account and you could just like deposit checks and that's all I want you to do. You know, it's fully extensible up and down and kind of creates a lot of value in terms of how you can collaborate. So that's phase one. Phase two is like integrated revenue, spend, and payroll management. So if you have the core banking layer, you're building software around the key areas of the SMB wallet. So income, bills, expenses, payroll, and you get a bunch of benefits here. Number one, you're delivering kind of a combined, you know, product suite, which, you know, traditional banks can't compete against, right? Big bank, small bank, they just can't build software in the same way that like a fintech like us can. Two, you get the benefit of two very sticky products, like workflow automation software, like something that delivers like accounts payable automation as an example, combined with banking. It just, creates a lot of lock-in with the customer because you're delivering so much value. And then number three is you're getting a better view of the SMB, like a much more fulsome view of the data set. Small business, part of the challenge that they've historically experienced in the banking space is it's hard to underwrite them. But with a higher quality data set and a more fulsome perspective, perhaps you could actually offer better lending terms and have an underwriting edge. And then phase three, which I would say is like the superset of the opportunities, we layer in the general ledger. We build in the accounting software into Relay. And if we can do all of these three things, and then you combine that, I feel a little cheesy saying it, but you combine that with the power of AI, you can imagine like automatic cash flow automation, moving money based on, oh, there's a pay run coming up. We know that, we're going to be $10,000 short. We're going to move this money across here, or automatically optimizing how you're saving money to maximize the interest that you're making on the funds that you have available. You can imagine that engine getting really, really smart and really powerful, where you're almost, people talk about finance, like the auto, finance on autopilot. I think that that could actually be achieved in this context, but I think you need to build the fulsome data set to be able to do it properly and build the tools around the core banking experience.
So let's say I put you into a time machine now and I bring you back in time. Let's say I bring you back in time to that moment where you got fed up with law school and you're coming now thinking about maybe like doing something of your own, let's say 2010, and you have the opportunity of having a chat with that younger Joseph and being able to give your younger self one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Ooh, one piece. I mean, there's so much advice I would give. I think the biggest unlock for me on the journey has been going from, being driven by like a chip on my shoulder and wanting to prove that, hey, I can do this and I can be successful at this, to reframing everything as learning, whether it's a great moment or a crappy moment. When you reframe it as learning, I think it changes your perspective and also enables you to operate better in that moment. So if something bad is, you, as a founder, sometimes bad things happen, right? Like this is part of the journey. And if you reframe it as like, hey, I earned the right to learn this lesson and I'm going to learn it and I'm going to figure this out. And next time, knock on wood, hopefully it doesn't happen. But if it does, I'm going to be more prepared and I'm going to do it better. It changes your whole perspective. And I wish I knew that, when I was 20, 25, that'd be great.
That's incredible. Now, Joseph, there's probably a lot of people that are listening that they are quite inspired and that are wondering, how they could reach out and learn more and say hi. What is the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, you can follow us on Twitter at Bank with Relay, or X, I guess I should say, or follow me on X at YC West, or you can send me an email, yosEPH@relayfi.com.
Easy enough. Well, Joseph, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.